Imagine reaching for a glass of water during a crisis, when hospitals are overwhelmed and a pharmacy trip is out of the question. The water looks clear enough. It came from a stream you found, a rain barrel you filled, or a container you stored months ago. You drink it. 2 days later, you and half your household are doubled over with stomach cramps, vomiting, and diarrhea that will not stop. Now the people you counted on to protect and provide are flat on their backs, dehydrating fast, with no easy way to recover. This is how preparedness fails. Not with a dramatic collapse, but with a single bad decision about water. Here is the foundational truth that every self-reliant person needs to understand. Almost no water you collect or store is safe to drink as is. Rainwater picks up contaminants from your roof and the air. Stream water carries whatever passed through it upstream, including animal waste. Groundwater can hide chemicals and metals you cannot see or taste. Even water you stored yourself can grow dangerous over time. All of it is presumed unsafe until you treat it. Purification is the step that turns a questionable source into a survivable one. In normal times, a case of waterborne illness means a rough few days and maybe a doctor visit. In a crisis, when medical help is thin and every person matters, a single illness can cascade through an entire household within days. Dehydration from waterborne disease kills faster than thirst alone. That is why water treatment is not a nice-to-have skill. It is a survival skill on the same level as food and shelter. This article is not a walkthrough of one method. It is a command center, a place to understand the full landscape of turning suspect water into potable water. The single most important lesson here is this: no one method solves everything. A serious water plan layers several methods, matched to the specific threats you face. To make those choices well, you need two things: an understanding of what actually makes water unsafe, and a survey of the major methods and what each one can and cannot beat. That is what the rest of this guide delivers. Why almost no water is safe to drink as is. The starting point for any water plan is a simple, uncomfortable assumption: treat every source as unsafe until you have proven otherwise or treated it properly. This is not paranoia. It is how professionals in disaster zones and remote settings operate, because the cost of being wrong is so high. Consider where your water actually comes from in a crisis. Rain seems clean, but it washes contaminants out of the air and off whatever surface it lands on, including roofing materials, gutters, and debris. Acid rain, formed when pollution mixes with moisture in the atmosphere, can carry its own chemical concerns. Stream and river water may look crisp and cold, but you have no idea what is happening upstream. A dead animal, a livestock field, or human waste even a mile away can seed the water with organisms that will make you violently ill. Groundwater pulled from wells or springs can carry dissolved chemicals, heavy metals, and bacteria that give no warning through taste, smell, or color. And here is the part many people miss: even water you collected and stored correctly can become unsafe. Containers can leach chemicals, seals can fail, and biological growth can take hold if water sits too long without proper treatment or rotation. The crisis multiplier. What makes water so critical in an emergency is the way problems compound. In everyday life, if you get sick from bad water, you rest, you rehydrate, and if it gets serious, you get medical care. In a genuine crisis, all three of those safety nets thin out or disappear. Rest is hard when there is work to be done to keep your household running. Rehydration is difficult when clean water is exactly the resource you are short on. And medical care may be hours away, overwhelmed, or simply unavailable. Now multiply that across a household. Waterborne illness spreads. If one person is sick from a contaminated source, everyone drinking that same water is likely already exposed. Within a couple of days, you can have every member of your group weak, dehydrated, and unable to help each other. This is why water treatment failures are among the fastest ways preparedness collapses. It is not the dramatic event that gets you. It is the quiet mistake of trusting water you should not have. What this guide will and will not do. This article is an orientation to the entire water treatment landscape. Its job is to help you think clearly and make good decisions, not to teach you the exact steps of any single method. You will leave with two big ideas firmly in place. First, a threat taxonomy, an understanding that the things making water unsafe are fundamentally different problems, each needing its own kind of response. Second, a method survey, a map of the major treatment approaches and which threats each one actually handles. Once you understand both, matching the right method to the right threat becomes far less overwhelming. For the precise measurements, dosing, and step-by-step protocols, you will be pointed to dedicated guides for each method. Think of this page as the map. The individual method guides are the detailed directions. What actually makes water unsafe? The most common and dangerous mistake in water treatment is thinking of contamination as one blurry hazard. It is not. Unsafe water is made unsafe by several distinct categories of problems, and each one demands a different kind of response. A method that wipes out one category may do absolutely nothing against another. Before you can choose a tool, you have to diagnose the threat. Here are the main categories to understand. Biological pathogens. These are living organisms, and they are the most common cause of waterborne illness worldwide. They break down into three groups. Bacteria, such as the kind found in fecal contamination, cause many gut infections. Viruses are much smaller than bacteria and can slip through defenses that stop larger organisms. Protozoan cysts, like the ones responsible for stubborn intestinal illness, are tough, hardy organisms wrapped in a protective shell that makes them resistant to some chemical treatments. Biological pathogens typically come from anything living, including animal and human waste, that has touched the water. Any surface water source should be assumed to carry them. The good news is that this category responds well to heat and, in most cases, to chemicals and UV light. The catch is that the three subgroups do not all respond the same way to every method, which is why the details matter so much. Suspended sediment and turbidity. This is the cloudiness, dirt, silt, and floating particles you can often see. On its own, sediment may not make you sick, but it causes serious problems. Cloudy water can shield pathogens from chemical and UV treatment, giving them places to hide. It also clogs filters quickly and makes water unpleasant to drink. Turbidity usually comes from runoff, stirred up riverbeds, or storms. The response here is physical. You have to remove or settle out the particles, and dealing with turbidity is almost always a first step before other treatments can work well. Dissolved chemical contaminants. These are substances dissolved right into the water where you cannot see them. They can include agricultural runoff, industrial pollutants, fuel, pesticides, and byproducts of pollution such as those associated with acid rain. Chemical contamination is especially dangerous because it gives no obvious warning and because most common treatments do nothing to remove it. Boiling water, adding chemicals, or shining UV light on it will not touch dissolved chemicals. Some can even become more concentrated when you boil water down. This category requires very different tools, which we will get to. Heavy metals. Metals like lead, arsenic, and mercury can dissolve into water from natural rock formations, old pipes, industrial contamination, or mining activity. They are invisible and tasteless, and they build up in your body over time, causing lasting harm. Like chemical contaminants, heavy metals are not affected by heat, chemicals, or UV. They demand specialized treatment to physically separate them from the water. Salinity salt water is its own distinct problem. Seawater and some brackish groundwater contain salt in amounts that will actively dehydrate you faster if you drink them. No amount of boiling, chemical treatment, or filtering with a standard field filter will make salt water drinkable, because the salt is dissolved throughout. Removing salt requires methods that separate pure water from everything dissolved in it. Why this matters before you pick a tool? The reason to learn these categories is straightforward. Identifying the threat comes before selecting the method. If you treat cloudy stream water for bacteria but ignore the sediment, your treatment may fail. If you boil water contaminated with fuel, you have hot contaminated water. If you filter salt water through a straw filter, you still have undrinkable salt water. Every category has a matching response, and the next section maps those responses out, the major purification methods and what each one beats. Now that you can name the threats, here is a survey of the major method families and what each one actually accomplishes. Pay close attention to the limits, because the limits are where people get hurt. Remember, this section explains what each approach can and cannot do. For exact times, doses, and steps, turn to the dedicated guide for each method. Boiling is the oldest and most reliable way to kill biological pathogens. Bringing water to a rolling boil destroys bacteria, viruses, and protozoan cysts across the board. It requires no special chemicals or equipment beyond a heat source and a container, which makes it a dependable fallback. But boiling has hard limits. It does nothing to remove sediment, dissolved chemicals, heavy metals, or salt. In fact, boiling water with those contaminants can concentrate them as some water evaporates. Boiling handles the biological category well and nothing else. Chemical treatment. Chemical treatments include chlorine, unscented household bleach, iodine, and chlorine dioxide. These work by killing or deactivating biological pathogens, and they are lightweight, portable, and good for treating larger quantities. Their reach varies by product. Some are excellent against bacteria and viruses but weaker against certain protozoan cysts, while others handle a broader range. Chemical treatment also works poorly in cloudy water, since particles shield pathogens, so turbid water must be cleared first. And like boiling, chemicals do nothing for dissolved chemical contamination, heavy metals, or salt. They are a biological solution only. Physical filtration. Filtration covers pump filters, gravity filters, and straw-style personal filters. These force water through material with tiny pores, physically straining out contaminants larger than the pore size. This is where micron ratings come in. A filter's micron rating tells you the size of particles it can catch. Most quality field filters are rated to catch bacteria, protozoan cysts, and sediment very effectively. This makes filtration excellent for clearing cloudy water and removing many pathogens. But here is the single most important distinction in this entire guide. Filtration is not the same as purification. Most field filters have pores too large to catch viruses, which are far smaller than bacteria. That means a filter can leave your water looking crystal clear while still carrying a viral threat. Standard filters also do not remove dissolved chemicals, heavy metals, or salt, though some include added materials like activated carbon that can reduce certain chemicals and improve taste. When you hear the word filter, do not assume the water is safe to drink. Filtration is a powerful step, but it is often only part of the answer. UV and solar disinfection. Ultraviolet light, whether from a battery-powered UV device or from sunlight in the solar disinfection method, damages the ability of biological pathogens to reproduce, effectively neutralizing them. UV treatment is effective against bacteria, viruses, and protozoa when done correctly. Its major limitation is that it only works in clear water, because particles create shadows where organisms can hide. It also requires either working batteries or reliable sunlight and time. And once again, UV does nothing for chemicals, heavy metals, sediment, or salt. It is a biological tool that demands clear water to function. Distillation works differently from everything else. It boils water into steam, then captures and cools that steam back into liquid, leaving contaminants behind. Because it separates pure water vapor from everything else, distillation addresses the categories that stump other methods. It removes salt, many heavy metals, and many dissolved chemicals, while the heat also kills biological pathogens. This makes distillation the broad-spectrum fallback, the method to reach for when you suspect the threats other tools cannot handle. Distillation is not perfect. It is slow, it requires significant fuel or energy, and some chemicals with low boiling points can carry over into the finished water. But when salt or chemical contamination is on the table, distillation is often the only field option that can produce drinkable water. It is worth understanding precisely because it covers the gaps the other methods leave open. Choosing the right method, a field decision framework. With the threats mapped and the methods surveyed, you can now make decisions instead of guesses. The framework is simple to state: identify your source, identify the suspected contaminant, and reach for the method that matches. Here is how that plays out in practice. Matching source and threat to method. If you have clear stream, lake, or rainwater and your main concern is biological pathogens, boiling is the most reliable single method, with chemical treatment or UV as strong alternatives when fuel is scarce. Filtration is excellent for this too, but remember it may miss viruses, so many people follow filtration with a chemical or UV step for full protection. If your water is cloudy or full of sediment, treat the turbidity first. Let the water settle, then pre-filter it through a physical filter or even a clean cloth before applying chemicals, UV, or boiling. Trying to disinfect murky water directly is one of the most common failures, because the particles protect the very organisms you are trying to kill. If you suspect dissolved chemicals, heavy metals, or salt, most ordinary methods will fail you. This is where distillation becomes the answer. When there is any chance of chemical contamination from runoff, industrial sources, or pollution, or when your only water is salty, distillation is the tool that can actually make it drinkable. No amount of boiling, filtering, or chemical treatment will remove salt. Why layering is the mark of a serious plan. Notice how often the best answer is not one method but a sequence. Pre-filter cloudy water, then disinfect it. Filter out bacteria and cysts, then use chemicals or UV to handle viruses. Distill when chemicals or salt are in play. Layering methods is not overkill. It is the honest response to the reality that no single method covers every threat. A casual approach reaches for one tool and hopes. A serious water plan combines methods so that the strengths of one cover the weaknesses of another. Staying educated on how these methods stack together is what separates a plan that works from one that only looks good on paper. Water is one connected system. Purification does not stand alone. It sits in the middle of a larger water system, connected to what comes before and after it. On one side is collection. Every drop you gather, whether from rain, streams, or the ground, arrives needing treatment. how and where you collect water shapes what contaminants it carries, which in turn shapes how you treat it. Collection feeds purification. On the other side is storage. Once you have treated water, you have to hold it, and stored water raises its own questions. How long can it sit before it needs retreatment? How do you rotate your supply so nothing grows stale or unsafe? How do you keep stored water from becoming recontaminated? Purification and storage work hand in hand, because treated water that is stored poorly can become unsafe all over again. Seeing water as one continuous system, collection feeding purification feeding storage, is what turns scattered skills into genuine self-reliance. Each part depends on the others. The natural next step from here is to dive into the individual method guides, where you will find the exact measurements, dosing, timing, and step-by-step protocols that this overview intentionally left out. This page gave you the map. Those guides give you the directions. Conclusion: water treatment is not about memorizing one trick. It is about thinking clearly under pressure. Start by assuming your water is unsafe. Then ask what threat you are actually facing, because biological pathogens, sediment, chemicals, metals, and salt are all different problems with different solutions. Match the method to the threat, and layer methods when one tool cannot do the whole job. Remember the distinction that trips up so many people: filtration is not purification. Connect your treatment to how you collect and store water, and you have a real system instead of a handful of loose habits. Use this page as your command center, then move on to the detailed method guides for the exact steps. Getting water right is getting survival right.